You're listening to Talking Teesdale, a regular podcast covering Barnard Castle and the surrounding villages. Brought to you in association with the Witham Community Arts Centre.
Hello once again, welcome along to Talking Teesdale. I'm Stuart Launday.
And I'm Jane Woodward.
How are you doing? Have you had a good week?
A very busy week.
Yes. You were thrown a bit of a curveball, weren't you, by poor old Barbara Dixon?
Yeah, who wasn't well.
A bit under the weather. Came as a surprise to everybody.
It did. So, yeah. But she's coming back.
Excellent.
That's the good news.
That's all right. We'll bring you news of that once everything's firmed up.
Yep.
On there. Now then, going back to school days once again, as we occasionally do.
Yes.
Did you ever play rugby?
No, absolutely not.
You're not a rugby type?
No, I did hockey and lacrosse.
Oh, right.
I wasn't very good.
I sort of see you as a quick running back on a rugby field.
No, I don't think so. Rugby's not my thing.
It's not actually mine. I only ever played one game of rugby. We never had rugby at our school. I'm a little comprehensive school. Mm-hmm. We never had it until we got a PE teacher called Tom Argument, and he was a big rugby player.
Tom Argument?
Yep.
That's a good name.
he decided to introduce rugby to Herworth Comprehensive School.
Uh-huh.
So we had a go, and I'll be perfectly honest. I mean, I didn't understand the rules. I still don't understand the rules. And when we played a game, I kept doing things wrong.
Really? That's not like you, Stuart.
So that was my one and only venture onto the rugby field.
Oh, no. Well, we didn't do rugby at Poland. It wasn't ladylike.
Oh, this would be in the days when Poland was all ladies.
Exactly.
Oh, no, definitely. Stick to the jolly hockey sticks.
Yes.
Anyway, the reason I mention this is that we're going to be talking ladies rugby. It's the Women's World Cup final this weekend, you know, and it's been huge.
Mm-hmm.
Massive crowds. England are in the final.
Mm-hmm.
We've finally found a sport that we're pretty good at.
Yep.
On the back of this, Barney Rugby Club is doing their best to resurrect, I think that's the right word, the ladies section. They've had a ladies rugby down at the club for a while, struggled after COVID, and now they're trying to hope that the success of the England ladies team inspires a few ladies and girls to go along and have a go.
Great.
So that's coming up. Mm-hmm. And also a really interesting interview with Emmanuel Sanobi. Who's done a show all about how he nearly literally died on stage. I'm not talking about telling a bad joke that didn't go down very well. Like literally died on stage. And that's really interesting. So that's coming up as well.
Brilliant.
So a pretty decent show, I think.
It is.
So best crack on.
We had.
Hi, I'm Jim.
And I'm Sheila.
We're volunteers at the Witham.
And you're listening to Talking Teesdale with Stuart and Jane.
Thanks to the World Cup, which has seen England and Canada through to the final, interest in women's rugby has never been higher. Huge crowds have been turning up to the games, from a sellout start at Sunderland Stadium of Light to the final at Twickenham. Officials and coaches at Barnard Castle Rugby Club are hoping the interest in the women's game will inspire some girls and ladies to come along to training sessions at the club. Women's rugby at Barney is nothing new, but having been badly affected during the COVID pandemic, attempts are now being made to rekindle interest in the ladies' section, as coach Paul Davis explained.
So we started, it'll be somewhat 10 years ago. And prior to COVID, we had under 13s, under 15s, under 18s, and a full ladies section. And unfortunately, COVID hit, and everything just faded. So we're just trying to resurrect it and hoping that the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, sort of gets people interested, because it's been phenomenal rugby and a great showcase.
I was going to say, it helps having the England team in the final, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it already. It's been a great tournament for a lot of the home nations, really.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really follow ladies rugby, but I must be honest, I was surprised to see Canada in the final.
Canada, they're not a surprise. They actually are ranked second in the world, New Zealand are third. But New Zealand have the history of it. The shocking thing is that Canada had to do a crowdfund to get to the World Cup, even though they're the second highest rated team within the tournament.
Blimey. Bringing it back to Barney, I suppose one of the things that we should talk about first is parents might have a few reservations in letting the girls come along to play rugby. It is, by its very nature, a physical game. So what would you sort of say to allay any sort of worries they have?
All the coaches that we have down here are fully qualified. The lead coach is Chris Holmes, and he was part of the England Pathway Development team. And it's, we will never do anything that if we think is unsafe, and we'll never chuck anybody in at the deep end if we don't think they're going to be in a safe position on the pitch. It is a physical game, but with the correct technique, you can avoid hard collisions, and it's not as physical as it actually looks.
You say, I mean, obviously you don't throw people in at the deep end. Do you start off with things like touch rugby and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so where we are currently right now, we're trying to resurrect what we started. So any new players that come down, our format is that we start with touch. And with that, you can mix the age groups because it's non-contact. We're slowly developing a little bit of contact into the, but we're not actually having full-on live tackling until everybody's in that safe zone. If we got to the point where we're all having, we are doing contact and a new player came down, that player would be withheld out of that and they would be shown again the correct techniques. And that could take weeks. It could be that the player just naturally takes it. But it's up to us as a coaching staff to make sure that all the safeguarding procedures are followed and the players aren't put at risk.
Just for the minute then, you're a bit away from competitive rugby.
Yeah, we are. The closest team that we've got to contact and play an actual game is the ladies. We're still wanting a few more. We hope to be going to schools in the new year. With we've got somebody who hopes to be going to schools as a full-time job. We're just trying to sort that out. But yeah, we're still away, but we can do some non-contact game, so we can arrange that and get that sorted sooner rather than later. And that's one goal. That's the neater goal.
Yeah. Is one of the things, I know some of the junior teams in the past you've sort of paired up with other clubs to put a team out. Is that the sort of thing you can do? I mean, you obviously have good relations with other clubs around the area.
Yeah, so years ago we were the junior section, the girls' age grade sections was part of Malden Castle. So we teamed up in Malden Park. Unfortunately, because we've been so far behind other clubs, they formed with the clubs. And the development pathway for girls rugby has changed from when we first started, because they would do a pitch up and play where if we had three players, we'd turn up at Malden Park. They'd have seven. Another team would have three or four or five, and you'd just get games going. So that in itself grew the interest. Now, unfortunately, they just focus on established teams. So there's not the pitch up and players like they used to, but it's out there. If we wanted to go and amalgamate with a team for one weekend, we can do that.
But it sounds like there is a little bit of catching up to do at the minute.
There is. But we're doing really well. We've sort of doubled the numbers at training recently. And we're hoping that the World Cup has caught the imagination of some of the girls and some of the ladies and think, those girls can, we can.
I was going to say, what's the great thing about rugby? I mean, there's a lot of choice out there for kids these days. What's so good about playing rugby?
It's that old argument, isn't it? It's what it creates after the pitch. I started playing rugby as a 16-year-old boy, and I wasn't confident. Didn't have a great deal of friends, and I came to the club, and I would say it just developed me as a person. It's very cliche to say, but I think the sport, because of the nature of the physicality, it does sort of bring it out of you a little bit, that you do become very much more confident and the team spirit. That's what the friends I've made, I'll never ever lose contact with. And that's the great thing about rugby.
Yeah. It's good fun as well, isn't it?
Oh yes, it is. I can't deny that. I'm too old to be playing, but I'm still playing because I'll never give up. I love it.
Brilliant stuff. But if anybody's interested, how do they get involved?
So we have a Facebook page, obviously. If you just search Banner Castle Rugby Club, I'm on Facebook as Paul Davis. My email is paul.davis@bcrufc.org, and my mobile is 077-400-86685. And even if it's just for information, just contact it. The club has a full section of juniors, boys and girls, ladies section and men's section. So anybody interested in coming down, even just to watch, grow the sport.
Brilliant, Paul. Thanks very much. Among those who turned up for training on Wednesday night was Abby Blackburn, and she told me she's been into the sport from a very young age.
I initially started playing when I was about 5 years old, and I was drawn to it through my brother playing, and me missing out on going out on Sundays with my brother and my dad. So that's what initially drew me to rugby, and I've kind of played ever since, really.
What keeps you going to it? You know, obviously you keep coming back and back to it now because you're not five anymore.
No, definitely not five anymore. And I stopped properly playing in 2010 after a knee injury, and just recently took it back up, coming back down to Barnard Castle to try and help support, bring the ladies team back up and running. And it's just that desire to be part of a team and a community, you know, make new people, meet new friends, and a bit of different exercise. It's much easier to kind of motivate yourself if you've got a team around you rather than trying to flog yourself at the gym and kind of push yourself just individually.
Absolutely. So have you played competitively before?
I have, yes. Yeah.
So you like the sort of cut and thrust of a big game?
Yes, yeah. I mean, that's the ultimate drive, isn't it, to prepare for a game and go out there and win and have that competitive edge to it. But equally, coming down and having a good intense game of touch, I mean, it always turns competitive anyway. I don't know if anyone turns up just to take part, but that's the drive, just to have good competitive friendly game of rugby.
Having been playing for so long, it probably doesn't, it's probably never occurred to you, but the sort of physicality of the game, that's never been something to put you off.
It hasn't done it up until recently. I think as I've got older and your body takes longer to recover, you do kind of maybe err on the side of caution every now and again, or be quite thankful that you're only getting half a game. You're not too fussed about being out there for the 80 minutes because it does take the body that bit longer. But that's all part and parcel of it.
But it's not something that you would, you know, if somebody was thinking about having a go, you wouldn't worry about that side of things?
No, absolutely not. You kind of, you're trained into learning how to protect yourself, keep yourself safe within the game, and keep others safe equally. I think if you train properly, you'll be safe in all the right equipment and things like that. So
the reason I'm doing this now is to sort of coincide with the Women's World Cup on there. So have you been following?
I have indeed, yeah. I've had previous friends that have played in the 2014 World Cup, so I've been following it along with them and just with family and rugby clubs and friends alike. So yes, Saturday is going to be a very, very special day, hopefully.
It's been incredible. The crowds at the grounds is the thing that's got me. It seems to have captured the imagination this time, doesn't it?
It really has. I was at the opening ceremony game in Sunderland and then went to one of the games for Samoa in York, and just the atmosphere was incredible. To have crowds like that turn up to women's rugby is just phenomenal. And I think it's a change in the direction that it's going, and it's all for the good.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And a quick reminder that if you fancy getting involved in the girls and ladies rugby setup, just simply search for Barnard Castle Rugby Club on the socials.
Hi, this is Louise, Queen of Social Media, and you're listening to Talking Teasdale with Stuart and Jane.
And now from rugby to comedy. 6 years after almost literally dying on stage, comedian Emmanuel Sanoubi has written a show about the experience. It was back in 2019 when he was performing in Dubai that he felt ill on stage. He managed to complete his set and then flew home before realising the seriousness of his situation. It turns out he suffers from a condition called dilated cardiomyopathy, which basically prevents the heart pumping enough oxygen around the body. His new show is called Life After Near Death, and he brings it to the Witham Barnard Castle on Thursday, October the 23rd. I caught up with Emmanuel to find out more.
For most comedians, when you talk about dying on stage, it's perhaps that they don't go down so well with the audience. But in your case, it has a much more literal meaning, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And that used to be my biggest fear, dying on stage, as it's called, where the joke doesn't land. And then all of a sudden, I found myself nearly dying on stage, the literal sense of it, and it changed everything.
The other thing, I was reading up on this as well, and it wasn't just as if you were performing somewhere at a venue in the UK. You were over in Dubai.
What actually happened was I was going through heart failure but didn't know it. And I think not knowing it is what kind of saved me, because I just tried to stay as relaxed as I could. But then it just got progressively worse and worse overnight. And then I actually flew home from Dubai on oxygen for the whole way because I couldn't breathe. And then got to the hospital back in London, and that's when they put me in straight into the ICU and told us a few days later that it was heart disease and I was currently going through heart failure.
Oh my goodness. So is this a genetic condition, or was it brought on by lifestyle, or
it's a mixture of everything: genetics, lifestyle. There were so many things that added to the melting pot of what it was. that they still don't know. So we still sometimes do different testing to see if we can get to the cause, because even the genetic component of it is something that's never been reported on. Yeah. So they literally don't know.
And up until that point, up until the point that you became ill, had there been any sort of signs previously over the years?
No. It was so what was quite interesting with this is it's asymptomatic cardiomyopathy, which means I had zero symptoms. Normally you'll get things like swelling of the ankles and feet. I had none of that. It felt just very sudden. Do you know, like when you see the stories where you've got the football players that are just running down the field and then they just drop dead? That's the condition that I have. I got off very, very lucky.
I'm absolutely gobsmacked that you managed to get on a plane and fly home.
I just wanted to be home. And that was, I became sort of tunnel vision. If you get home, you'll be fine. That's the only thing that kept playing in my mind. Yeah. Plus, I was very lucky. I was sat next to a pair of paramedics who made sure that I had oxygen, and they monitored me the whole way back.
Blimey, that was fortunate.
Yes, it really was. And I think back to that now, and how fortunate it was that they happened to be sat in the seats next to me.
Before you found the humour in the situation, did you get angry about it? You know, why did it happen to me? I'm a youngish bloke.
I went through so many emotions. I went through all of the emotions. I learned emotions that I didn't know I had. It was an incredible journey to take, because you go with denial. It's like grief. You go through all the seven stages of grief. You go through the denial, thinking this can't be happening to me. And then you have to accept that it is happening to you, and what are you going to do about it? And even being told that at any point your heart could just stop made even waking up in the morning a beautiful thing, because you now realize how awesome a new day is.
I'm guessing it gives you a new perspective when you go out on stage.
Oh, hugely. Like, I'm a lot more carefree in my approach, that because now I've seen worse. When people go, oh, what's the worst thing that can happen? That, me nearly dying on stage is probably the worst thing that can happen. So because of that, going out, I don't have the fear of telling a bad joke anymore. Whereas before, I was terrified. I was like, please, everybody laugh. Whereas now, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Yeah. This tour that you're setting out on, you're doing 50-something dates.
Yes.
That's a lot of work, a lot of travel, a lot of energy to expend. I mean, it's not a question of are you up to it, but what sort of regime do you follow to enable you to do that?
I train a lot, but I also rest a lot as well. Yeah. And because I commute a lot of these, I'll be driving to and from places. You do get that time to sit down and decompress after a show. As far as work goes, I'm getting to live an absolute dream. I'm getting to travel to places and tell my story to people that want to hear it. It's a pleasure, really. And I think things like that make it easier to do.
Is this a condition that you just have to live with? Is there a cure?
No, there's no cure. You do have to live with it, but how you live that's your choice.
Yeah.
So it changed my outlook on how I treat myself as well.
I was just going to ask whether you made lifestyle changes as a result of this.
Oh, huge. I used to smoke really heavily.
Right.
And I haven't had a cigarette since 2019.
But you'll be feeling the benefits of that, presumably, in many ways, not, you know.
Oh, yeah. Especially my bank account. I remember the month I stopped smoking. The month I stopped smoking, it got to the end of the month. I was looking at my balance. I was thinking, why have I got so much money? And you don't put the two together because you've been spending hundreds of pounds a month on cigarettes.
The show that you're doing, are you trying to get a point across to people about looking after yourself? And
yeah, and it does go a little bit deeper than that as well, because there's the whole listening to your body. But then there's just the appreciation of life, really. I mean, it's a very happy ending. And this show very much, for me, is much more about honesty, which isn't the easiest thing for anyone to do when you really break it down. And it's just showing people that things can be okay if you're honest, especially with yourself.
This happened in 2019. How come now? Why is the show now, 6 years down the line? Why is there a reason it's taken so long?
Yeah, I had to process it. I wasn't ready to talk about it. And I wanted to, but I wasn't ready to talk about it in months afterwards, years after it, because there's a lot of parts of it that I still wasn't ready to be honest with myself with.
And do you still have to undergo a medical regime? Are you under the? Do you go to see the doctors, the specialists on a regular basis?
Yes, but not as regularly as I was before. Before it started off daily, and then that daily turned into weekly. That turned into monthly, and now I maybe see that I go and get checked once or twice a year.
You've taken this show out. You were at Edinburgh, weren't you, in August?
Yes, lovely.
What sort of reception did you get from the audiences?
They were incredible. They really were. They really got behind the show. And I've said it a few times, I wasn't ready for the level of empathy that came back from the audience. That was a really, really special moment. And the people that I love to see the people that come to my show, because it's such a mix. It's such a mix of everyone. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Have you had people coming up afterwards who've been through something similar?
All the time. And it's lovely to speak to them. I've had people that have either gone through heart failure or going through it. I had one lady that had a brain tumor. Oh, she was like, it just felt really nice to laugh at it. I've had people that have lost someone. I've had people that have gone through all different types of illness and ailments. And it's just nice that we can all laugh at it and know that it's going to be okay.
This is a one-off show. You're never going to be able to write another show like this, I'm guessing.
I hope not. I really hope not. I hope this is. I need to stop nearly dying. Is the main thing.
I probably didn't couch that in quite the best way. On that. But you'll get back to more sort of not run of the mill, but you know, sort of normal comedy after this one.
I really hope so, and I do think to myself, what. That is a conversation I have where I go, what's next? What do we do after this?
Yeah. Well, we'll wait and see with bated breath. But in the meantime, we'll really look forward to seeing you when you get to the Witham here in Barnard Castle on October the 23rd. Emmanuel, that's been fascinating. Can't wait to see you when you get on stage.
Oh, thank you very much. I'll see you soon.
And a reminder that Emmanuel Sanubi is on stage at the Witham on Thursday, October the 23rd. Tickets are available for the show now.
Hi, I'm the one and only Josh, the man, the myth, the legend, and you are listening to Talking Teasdale with Stuart and Jane.
So Jane's back. It's time to look at what's coming up at the Witham over the next few days and a couple of shows that have gone on sale for next year. The first one got me very excited, Spears and Bowden, so I immediately thought Brittany.
No.
No? Fresh
I
from
think it's the wrong spelling as well.
Fresh from Las Vegas, no?
No, this is traditional folk.
Oh, well. I'm sure it'll be just as good. Oops, I did it again.
Very good.
Tell me about Spears and Bowden.
So John Bowden, Bellowhead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Spears was in there as well. So they've got together as a duo. Bowden is the showman, Spears the Melodium Wielden Wizard. That's difficult to get your tongue round.
I was going
to
say, you did well with that.
Described by The Guardian as the finest instrumental duo on the traditional scene.
Excellent. When are they coming?
They are coming on Wednesday, the 18th of February.
And that's on sale now.
It
Excellent.
Is on sale now, yeah.
And then we've got another one featuring Oyster Band's John Jones.
Yes.
Now, Oyster Band, I am aware of, and we'll play out with a track of theirs later on.
Okay.
Folky, rocky stuff.
Yes.
But it's not Oyster Band, it is a trio.
It's
Explain
a trio.
Explain more.
So it's John Jones, Ray Cooper, and Al Scott, also known as Chopper. Or was that Ray Cooper that's also known as Chopper?
I think it's Ray Cooper.
I think it is. You see, I don't know much about Oyster Band. That's more your thing.
Yeah, like I say.
Folk rock.
Folk rocky stuff. Very listenable. And as I say, we'll play out with that. When they're coming?
They are coming on Wednesday, the 22nd of April. On sale now, and tickets are going fast. The Song Goes On Tour show, that's what it is.
Right.
So they're playing songs from their back catalogue.
Right, excellent stuff. Yep. Get your tickets for that one. Right, yep. Now, come
and
in.
And we do have another show that's gone on sale. It actually went on sale this morning, and it is already sold out.
Go on.
And it is a comedian.
Go on.
Quite a big comedian.
Yeah.
Chris Ramsey?
Oh, Chris Ramsey, yes.
He's coming back with one of his work in progress shows.
I was going to say that, let me guess, the tickets went in, what, 15 minutes?
Maybe not quite as quick as that, but they have definitely gone now.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So that's 6th of November.
Right. I would suggest you keep an eye on funnywaytobe.com because that's where I think Peter posts any returns, sort of thing. So, yeah, funnywaytobe.com if you fancy Chris Ramsey and you want to put your name down for a ticket or a return.
Definitely. Do you remember when he came and did that podcast, Work in Progress podcast show with his wife?
Yep.
Yeah. So we should get him on the podcast, shouldn't we? He might be able to give you a few tips, Stuart.
Me? What about you? Us. He could give us a few tips, I think. I don't know. Right, on to more mundane things.
Yes, okay.
What have we got coming up in the next week? We're heading off to we're going international and northwest with this one, The Breath. Tell me more.
The Breath, yes. Folk duo. So this is from Manchester.
Mm.
Yeah. And they're being supported by a Toronto roots duo from Canada, not Toronto.
Bishop Auckland.
Yeah.
I was right to go international then.
Bassett.
Excellent.
So that's going to be an interesting night.
Yeah. When is it? Wednesday,
isn't
it?
That is Wednesday, the 1st of October. October.
We're into October already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. And then we've got some theatre.
We have live theatre with Northumberland Touring Company. This is, it's two theatre shows in one night. So the first half will be The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
And the second half will be The Body Snatcher.
What a lovely night.
It will be. It will. It sounds, honestly, I fancy that one. I think I might go
I know, I think
it would
be
one.
Good.
I like live theatre.
Yeah. The theatre stuff's really good that comes. It's a pity. It should be supported more, let's put it that way. Without going off on one, it deserves more support than
it
gets.
Yes. Yes.
Jolly good. And then, we've got a couple of shows at the end of the week, but tickets have all gone.
They
so it's going to be returns only, isn't it?
Returns only, yeah. So we've got Andy Fairweather Lowe and the Lowe Riders.
He's been sold out for a while, hasn't he? Yeah, he's always popular wherever he goes.
Friday the 3rd and another comedian, Scott Bennett.
Yeah, Scott Bennett. He's another one that's very popular every time
Saturday
he comes.
Yeah, Saturday the 4th.
So again, it's returns only for those two.
Yep.
But for other tickets, where can we go?
We can go online.
To
www.thewitham.org.uk.
Or we can phone
01833 631107.
Excellent stuff. Right, have a good weekend.
And you.
And we shall speak next week.
We will.
Cheers.
Bye.
And as promised, we're going to play out this week with a track from the Oyster Band. This is called Corner of the Room. It's from the album Read the Sky. And Jane and I will be back in a week's time. So we'll see you then. Ta-da.
Corner. Did you ever get to Hollywood? Did you find that home in sky? I knew four walls wouldn't hold you, and you would always survive. I lost myself in the world of books, hungry to find the truth. Search for an education when I learn much more from you. And every night in Molly's bar we dance to our favourite tunes. And when the lights went down in Molly's bar we'd be there in a corner of the room. We'd be there in a corner of the room. We'd be there in a corner of the room. We'll be there in a corner of the room. We'll be there in a corner of the room.
For listening. We'll be talking Teasdale again soon. In the meantime, please spread the word. Like, share, and subscribe. Or go online to thewitham.org.uk.